In the spirit of the occasion, our next topic is entitled Following the Infallible, and we'll discuss lessons from the Ahlul Bayt that helped Imam Khomeini achieve his grand status. To discuss this topic, we're very happy to have Sheikh Muhammad Saeed Rahmanpour from the Research Department of the Islamic Centre of England. So without any further ado, can I request him to come to the podium with a loud salawat.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Very inspiring talks we had this afternoon, and it was very enlightening to hear both speakers who spoke before me. What I want to talk today is the path that Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, chose to follow the infallibles. Now, you know, there is a sort of disagreement or slight difference between Shia and Sunni in the definition or description of the infallibles. Well, definition doesn't have much problem, because infallible is someone who is both impeccable, that means they would not commit anything wrong against the commands of God, and they are also infallible in the sense that they do not make mistakes. And this, of course, needs huge faith and huge knowledge. If a person has these two together, huge faith, so to speak, unlimited faith and unlimited knowledge, that person would become infallible. Now, according to the Shia, of course, the Prophet, peace be on him, and all other prophets were infallibles. And also, Imam Ali, from among the companions, was infallible, and the Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet, who have a sort of a very definitive definition with regards to the people who are included in that Ahlul Bayt. According to the Sunni scholars, with slight difference in definition of infallible, of course the Prophet and all other prophets were infallibles, as I said, with a slight difference in definition, and to some extent all the companions of the Prophet were infallible. I can quote from Zarkashi, for example, who says that the companions of the Prophet were those people from whose heart all the evil was removed, and they were actually saved by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from committing any mistake, from telling any lie, and that is why we follow the footsteps of all the companions. Now, as I said, here there is not much difference about the definition of the infallibility. However, there is some sort of disagreement about the personalities who were infallible. Of course, we cannot accept that all companions of the Prophet, who were more than 100,000 people, and some of whom had just met the Prophet for a couple of hours or a couple of days, would fall under this criterion of infallibility, all criteria of infallibility, which is huge knowledge and huge faith. And of course, the Quran talks to us about the status of the of companions of the Prophet who were hit by Shaitan, as we have in the example of the Battle of Uhud. The Quran specifically mentions that those who turned away in the battle were hit by or slipped by the temptation of Shaitan. So we cannot actually regard all the companions to be infallible. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we had a discussion here at the Islamic Center in our thought forum that is there a meaningful difference between Shia and Sunni in our age? In our age, that's very important. Because there are certain things which are historical. Like, for example, who should have been the successor of the Prophet after his demise? Well, this is, we may argue with each other who should have been the successor of the Prophet, but in our age, this is not a very meaningful argument, because we cannot change the course of history. And we cannot, of course, argue for something which has happened 1400 years ago. So this is not a meaningful difference. To fight about this, to argue about this, is a meaningless argument. This is not something which comes into the area of meaningfulness in our difference, in the difference between Shia and Sunni. However, the conclusion we made was that there is one very important meaningful difference, and that is who to follow when there is a disagreement about the interpretation of the Quran and about the Sunnah of the Prophet. Now, let me draw your attention to a very famous theologian, Shiite theologian of the early ages, who gave a very beautiful description about the difference between Shia and Sunni. And by going through that, we will find that many sort of different arguments and contentions that we are creating today is really meaningless. We are arguing not about the core of the matter. We are arguing about the peripheries. And this is, of course, sad. Now, I mentioned what this great theologian said about the difference, and then I want to come to Imam Khomeini to see how did he take this. This is very important. Practically, how did he take that? Now, the great theologian is one of the companions of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, and Imam al-Baqir. Called Aban bin Taghlib. Aban bin Taghlib is very famous. He's one of the people who was expert in Quran recitation. Seven famous reciters who are actually the standard scholars of recitation of the Quran, were his students. So he was expert in the knowledge of the Quran and also in fiqh and theology. Now, once he was asked, what is the difference between Shia and Sunni? Why do you insist on something which the rest of the Ummah are not insisting upon? He said, look, in many areas we have no difference. We want to follow the right interpretation of the Quran. We want to follow the Sunnah of the Prophet. However, we know, this is a fact, we cannot deny it. We know that the companions of the Prophet after him, they disagreed amongst themselves about the Sunnah of the Prophet and about the interpretation of the Quran. They had their own opinions. You go to the books of Tafsir, you see that different companions had different interpretations about certain verses of the Quran. Sometimes these contradict with each other. You go to the Sunnah of the Prophet, peace be on him, you will see that companions have actually differed amongst themselves about what was the correct Sunnah of the Prophet. How did the Prophet pray? How did the Prophet perform Hajj, for example? How did he did certain acts which were related to state, social affairs? There are disagreements among the companions of the Prophet. Now, Aban says that where there is no disagreement, we have no difference. And you see, that's the bulk of the acts of worship, interpretation of the Quran, interpretation of the Sunnah, the bulk of it among Shia and Sunni, there is no difference. However, when there is a difference among the companions, the Shia are those who follow the opinion of Ali as against all other opinions. And who can criticize the Shia for doing that? Because the Prophet never said what he said about Ali ibn Abi Talib, that ana madinatul ilm wa aliyun babuha. I am the city of knowledge and Ali is the gate to that city. Not that if anyone wants to know something in my lifetime, before asking me, he should go and ask Ali ibn Abi Talib. No. It means after I pass away, after my demise, if you want to have access to my knowledge, that's the gate. So he says, this is what we do. This is what we do after the Prophet. And also we know that after Ali, there was disagreement about his sunnah and about his words. So if there is any disagreement in that regard, we would refer to the account of Ja'far ibn Muhammad al-Sadiq, wherever there's a disagreement about the words of Ali. This is the definition of Shia. So, in that regard, he has first of all defined for us the infallibles. Who are the infallibles that we want to follow? And secondly, the major meaningful difference is about the authority on knowledge. Authority on the sunnah of the Prophet, who gives the right sunnah, the correct sunnah, and authority on, of course, the interpretation of the Quran. Now, I mentioned that just to clarify what I mean by following the infallible. Following the infallible means following those who gave us the correct accounts of the sunnah of the Prophet, peace be on him, and the right interpretation of the Quran. It is a known fact, of course, we cannot deny that Muslims argue with each other about the correct interpretation of the Quran. And therefore, we want an authority on that. And the meaningful difference is the difference in that authority. Now, let's come back to the following, the topic that we were discussing today, Imam Khomeini following the infallible. We have, of course, heard lots of anecdotes, lots of beautiful stories about Imam Khomeini's personal life, the way he followed the infallibles. He followed the footpath of those who had right and true access to the sunnah of the Prophet, peace be on him, who is at the helm and top of infallibility. However, what I don't want to go into that. We had the beautiful story Father Gelly mentioned about when the Prophet was in Nufl al-Chateau on the eve of Christmas. First of all, he apologized to all the neighbors for the trouble, the traffic and all those noise and hue and cry was made when he was there. He apologized, and also he sent them flowers and gifts, which would give us the type of mentality of Imam Khomeini and the beautiful, peaceful environment of his mentality he was living in. You compare that with the mentality of these takfiris who claim to be Muslims and who want to kill every non-Muslim in the world, that everyone should be destroyed, should be killed. Just you compare these two type of mentalities with each other, and you can somehow see in what sort of mindset Imam Khomeini used to live. However, this did not mean that he ever was lenient towards those who oppressed these non-Muslims in terms of understanding. And Muslims as well. I mean, there's no difference. So, he, of course, personally, in his personal life, he used to follow exactly the footprint of the infallibles. And he did not claim that he was perfect in that, but he always said, we are trying. We are trying to go after them. And if you hear the stories about how did the Prophet and Amirul Mu'minin and other A'imma alayhimus salam behaved, and how did they treat non-Muslims? How did they discuss with them? You see that this was exactly the same sort of mindset and psychology. Now, I don't want to go into those personal things. I want to emphasize on one very important thing which was neglected throughout the history by many Shia scholars. And that was, our infallibles did not think that you can purify yourself alone without being able to purify your family. And you cannot purify your family without having dealt with the impurities in this greater society. And you cannot remove the impurities from the society unless you have dealt with corrupt politicians. This was the seerah. Of course, at times our a'imma didn't have opportunity to go about doing these things. However, they did not stop talking about it. What Imam Khomeini did following the infallibles, he said that you cannot talk of purity, faith, speak of these about these things, isolating it in your house or in your heart. You have to bring it in society. How can we do that? How can we bring it in society? Well, of course, politics. It's all politics. One very nice example that we can quote from the Quran is the idea that usually the Quran says that the prophets used to argue and have conflict with politicians of their times, not with people. The people were not an obstacle. It was the politicians who were obstacles. Now, let's go back to the stories of the prophets in the Quran. We know that the only prophet, as far as I remember, the only prophet who directly went to politicians and talked to them was Musa alayhi salam, because he was very clearly and explicitly sent to Pharaoh. Idhhab ila Pharaoh. Not that go to your people, go to Pharaoh directly. Innahu taha. Because he wanted to save Banu Israel from the clutches of the oppression of Pharaoh. However, no other prophet initially went to the court of a ruler. Neither Ibrahim, nor Ya'qub, nor Shu'aib, nor any other prophet, nor Hud, nor Saleh, they didn't go there. However, the Quran mentions that eventually they had to come to that point, talking to the politicians. And you see, all the time it says, قَالَ الْمَلَأُ مِنْ قَوْمِهِ. مَلَأُ are the politicians, are the rulers, are those who are at the top, at the helm of the society, the leaders. They did not speak first to the leaders, but when they spoke to the people, eventually the politicians felt threatened. Well, how come? This man is talking of justice. And if this message spreads, then we are in danger. This man talks of purity. If this message spreads, we are in danger. And therefore, they were brought before the courts of politicians. And they had to involve in politics. It is impossible you talk about God, about purity, about justice, and you are not somehow come into conflict and confrontation with politicians. It's not possible. Of course, Father Gelli mentioned the story from the Bible about that very clever question made put before Jesus, peace be on him, that should we give taxes to the emperor and to the Caesar? And he gave that clever answer. You see, Jesus Christ should face the politicians as well. What Imam Khomeini did was he reinstated a forgotten fact about the message of the infallibles. And that was, if you want to really talk about God, you have to come to society. You cannot take it into isolation, hide it in the back room of your house. You have to bring it in society. And that is actually the root of the idea of Wilayatul Faqih that he brought in. I know that there are some Shias nowadays who say that Wilayatul Faqih has not been historically Shi'i concept about politics. However, I would say that, if anyone says that, I would say that you are wrong. Go back to the history. You see, not only our A'imma,
but also early theologians and jurists like Sheikh Mufid, Sheikh Tusi, Sayyid Murtaza rahmatullah alayhim ajmain, they all talked about this issue. However, because of the pressures in the history, the Shias just kept quiet about this. The man who had the courage, who had the knowledge, who had the spirit, who had the faith to bring this idea back into the Shia theology and Shia fiqh was Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. And I just chosen a couple of quotes from Nahjul Balagha of Amirul Mu'mineen, which I do not go through because my time is coming to the end. However, in Nahjul Balagha also Amirul Mu'mineen says that if you want to purify the individuals, you have to purify the society. You have to start with politics. You cannot evade from it. And therefore, Imam Khomeini, by reinstating, I am actually emphasizing on the word reinstating the theory of Wilayatul Faqih, he followed the infallibles, the Prophet, peace be on him, and A'imma alayhimus salam, wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi at-tahirin.